Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. Darling, it's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world. It's a magical.
Welcome to the Sweep Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken's my co-host. Ken, how's it going?
Oh, Lynn, it is going. It is going. I am so happy to be here for this episode of the Sweep Spot.
This is episode 379.
379? Lynn, that's hard to believe.
Oh, we're almost to 380.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah. Good going, Lynn. Good going. That takes a lot of perseverance.
No, it takes a team effort. And if you're like, who are these jokers? We are both former Disneyland custodial cast members, and we host the number one Disneyland custodial, the number one Disney podcast hosted by two former Disneyland custodians.
Number one.
That's right. And we are also the authors of the books Queen of the Kingdom. You can get both those on Amazon and paperback. You can get the second book on our website, thesweetspot.com. We only have the second one signed by both of us on our website, and you can get them on Kindle, wherever electronic books are found, and audiobooks. You can get them both on audio, wherever audiobooks are found, Audible and whatnot. So get those. They're called Cleaning the Kingdom, two different volumes. And we have a Patreon. If you'd like to help support our show, you can join our Patreon and you get some great benefits, perks, I should say, and you get one bonus episode delivered to you per month that Ken and I record specifically for the Patreons. And then you also, once a month, get to join our current events live, where we record our current events and you, as you're listening to it, and then you get to interact with each other that are in the chat room and us by leaving comments. And sometimes I'll read a lot of them that pertain to what we're talking about at the moment. And it's a lot of fun. And you can join all that for $5 or more per month at patreon.com. Search The Sweep Spot or go to thesweepspot.com and click on the Patreon link. Ken, who is our guest tonight?
Heck if I know, Lynn. We are welcoming Imagineer and illustrator, artist, I should say, Ethan Reed. Yes, he worked for Imagineering.
Yeah.
And he's going to talk about that and some of the things he worked on.
Yeah, he was part of some really big projects, and I'm really looking forward to talking with him.
That'll be good. So stay tuned.
All right. Let's get right into it.
Looking to go to Disneyland Resort in California, Walt Disney World Resort in Florida, Aulani in Hawaii, or on a Disney cruise, or Adventures by Disney Vacation, I am here to help you book the best vacation possible, and my expertise and services won't cost you anything extra. Disney pays me, not you. As a perk by booking a package with me, I can also book your dining reservations, park reservations, tours, shuttles, and more. Let me do the hard work while you get excited about your upcoming Disney vacation. I can also book Universal Studios trips as well. By booking with me this year, you will receive 3 months free of our Patreon perk, like our bonus episodes, and join in on our current events live. So contact me at Barron, that's LBARRON, at concierge.com. That's concierge.com. Or thesweepspot@gmail.com.
So, Ethan, did you grow up in Southern California?
I did not grow up in Southern California. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and going to Disneyland was a treat, right? It was something would do at the end of a long road trip, like if we went to the Grand Canyon or Las Vegas or something like that on vacation, we'd always stop off at Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm on the way home, and it was always just magical.
Yeah. So it wasn't something you did yearly, you know?
You know, as my sister and I grew up, you know, got older, like, you know, we'd have like the big giant birthday parties at McDonald's. Right. And, you know, I'd have my Masters of the Universe because I'm a child of the, you know, 70s and 80s, oh, right? Yeah. I'd have my Masters of the Universe, you know, birthday party. And in fact, I think I had one that was themed to, you know, Rambo, because that was a thing, you know.
Yep.
Hey, kids, let's base, you know, party goods off of a rated R movie. So I, you know, we had all those fun, you know, birthday parties. And then as we got older, my parents asked my sister and I one year, and it was probably when the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday became an actual holiday, because my sister's birthday coincides with Martin Luther King's birthday.
Okay.
So they asked us one year, hey, do you guys want to do like the big birthday parties, or do you want us to like pull all that money together and we go on a trip to Disneyland? So of course my sister and I were like, well, yeah, we'll see our friends at school we'll still have cake, right? So we just started doing that. So every Martin Luther King weekend, it became a tradition in our household that we would drive down from the Bay Area to, you know, Anaheim, stay in one of those, you know, fun little hotels down on Harbor Boulevard. And if we were lucky, we might get to stay at the Disneyland Hotel. Mm-hmm. But it was, we loved doing that.
But as far as, I mean, you were into art, obviously, probably before that.
You know, it's interesting. I actually, when I was a kid, I was watching this is 1984. I'm watching the Academy Awards, and Clarence Ducky Nash, the original voice of Donald Duck, he got a special Academy Award, and it was for Donald's 60th birthday. There was like a big celebration they were doing at, you know, Walt Disney World at Disneyland. And, so he got the special Academy Award, and, you know, I was still pretty young. I still thought cartoon characters were real, I guess. And here's this, you know, nice, you know, kind looking gentleman up on stage, and, you know, the Donald costumed character is there with him getting the award. And then Clarence Nash, you know, says thank you as Donald Duck. So I watch his mouth, and I'm like, oh, that's amazing. So I'm sitting there on the floor, you know, my parents, you know, living room, and I start going rah, 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 just like trying to figure out how this guy was doing that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And I figured out how to do it. So in elementary school, I could go rah, 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 and you know, I was like pretty proud of myself. And gosh, I was probably like in fifth grade, Clarence Nash had passed away. Tony Anselmo, who was an animator at the Disney studio, he had taken over the role of Donald's voice. And we had a subscription through the Magic Kingdom Club, which was a club your parents could sign up for at work or something. And you would get a magazine, monthly magazine called Disney, or I guess it was
you get it four times a year, and it was called Disney News, and it would have stories about Disney stuff in it, and it had a whole story about Tony Anselmo taking the torch from Clarence Nash and becoming the new voice of Donald Duck. And, you know, Tony had a day job and it was an animator. So one day I was in fifth grade, I learned how to actually start forming words. Right. So I figured out how to do that. Yeah. And, but my grades were suffering, and my father pulls me aside one day, you know, after school. And he's like, Ethan, your grades really suffering. You know, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said, and you know, my dad, you know, and he's like, okay, that's cool. But you know, the guy who's the voice of Donald Duck now, he has something to fall back on. And I said, well, what does he do? Or I probably said, he said, you know, he's an animator. I'm like, that sounds like fun. So I told my dad, well, I'm going to be an animator too. So my parents were huge Disney fans. You know, they honeymooned at Disneyland, and they had purchased on one of our trips to the park, they had purchased a signed copy of The Illusion of Life by Frank. And so Frank Thomas and Ollie Johnson had signed it. So we had that in my house, and I would, you know, open it up and I'd look through it and I'd play with a little flip book in the corner, and I fell in love with animation. And when I was, you know, reading that book, I learned about this guy named Mark Davis. Yeah. And, you know, he animated Tinkerbell and all these amazing characters. And he was also an Imagineer. And there was this little bit in the back of The Illusion of Life that, you know, talked about, you know, animation in three dimensions. And it was all about audio-animatronics and, you know, bringing the animation to the parks and how Mark did that. And I was like, that's really cool. That's super fun. So, you know, I was, you know, I wanted to be the voice of Donald first. I wanted to be an animator. So I got The Illusion of Life. And then I, you know, dove into that book. And then I learned who Mark Davis was. And it's like, I wanted to be Mark Davis, but talk like Donald Duck. Right. And that was my goal. And, you know, so I didn't, you know, I would draw, but I wasn't like, you know, Michelangelo. I was 10, 8 years old, something like that. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just enjoyed drawing. And the thing I liked to draw the most was ducks, of course, because DuckTales was out. And I loved reading the old Carl Barks comic books. So it was very much a, you know, just being a fan first.
Right. That makes sense. And so fast forward a little bit, you went to college?
So I went to college. I wanted to go to CalArts. I learned what CalArts was, and I learned what CalArts was. Yeah, they talked about it in The Illusion of Life, but the thing that like drove it home to me was 1989, when Batman, like the Tim Burton one, first came out. There was bubblegum cards, Topps bubblegum cards.
I remember.
And and they were cool. And I remember getting them, or getting a pack or two, and I was going through them and, oh, these are so cool. And then there were some storyboard sketches by Tim Burton. And I remember looking at the storyboard sketch of Tim Burton, and it was like the Joker is like shooting his gun or something and like flying backwards. And you flip it over and it had like a little bio about Tim Burton, about how he went to this place called CalArts and was an animator at Disney. I'm like, yes, I have to go there, because Batman was the coolest thing. Who Framed Roger Rabbit had come out like a year before. So it's like CalArts was the only place for me in my mind. Right. Yeah, it's like I had to go there. And Tony Anselmo, who I, you know, mentioned earlier, the voice of Donald Duck, that's where he went. Right. So it's like, you know, and, you know, I watched Little Mermaid and fell in love with that, and, you know, knew who all those animators were, like, you know, Glenn Keane. And it's like, he went to CalArts. So it's like, really, that was the goal. It's like, so I had it all planned out. I was going to go, I'm going to go to CalArts. I'm going to graduate. I'm going to get a job at Walt Disney Animation Studios. I'm going to work there for 20, 30 years, like Mark Davis. And then in my 50s, right?
Yeah.
About 10 years before retirement, about 55, I'll go to Imagineering. Because at that point, I will be good enough to be an Imagineer, because you have to be that talented, right?
Right.
And so that was my life goal when I was 12 years old, right? Wow. And but it didn't work out that way. My, you know, it's like you asked, you know, were my drawing skills great? No, I took some illustration classes and stuff at my local community college. I took all the art classes that I had at my school. And everyone's like, oh, Ethan, you're the best draftsman, all this stuff. But this, you know, little film called Lion King came out, and LA Times said, oh, animators are making six-figure salaries. And everybody wanted to be an animator at the time, or a 2D animator. So CalArts, I know when I remember sitting down with the guy who was like in charge of admissions at CalArts, and he said, Ethan, you know, 2-3 years ago, we would let you in no problem, right? Mm-hmm. But so many people are trying to get into this program now. You really need to up your game, right? So I went to, so I was rejected from CalArts out of high school, right? And it was a good thing, right? At the time, it was a huge blow to me. I was like, this was my goal. This was my dream. So I went to, I was in the Bay Area. I learned that San Francisco State University had an animation program, and it was started by David Hand, who was the director of Bambi. And so it's like, oh, that's interesting. And I met the instructor who ran the program. Her name was Patricia Amlin, and you know, she had done like very what we'd call experimental animation, right? So like sand on glass, things like that. But she knew how to animate. She had all the equipment, and she taught us how to use it. So it was great. It was a really good place to start. And it was a you were supposed to be a junior to get into the program, but I begged and pleaded, and as a freshman I got into the program. So I spent 2 years at San Francisco State, and it was a great, great learning experience. I took sculpture. I took life drawing. I would, we weren't far from the San Francisco Zoo. So I would go there twice a week with my sketchbook and just sit there for, you know, 3 hours, you know, and just draw giraffes and elephants, all the stuff. And I learned later that Mark Davis used to sketch at the San Francisco Zoo. It was called Flyshacker's Zoo at the time, but, you know, it was Mark Davis. So I think he had like this crazy story about an orangutan, like grabbing his hand or something and not letting go. Cause he like became friendly with like the caretakers at the zoo. Cause they would see him all the time, like in the 1940s when he was there. But yeah, so it was, you know, San Francisco is such an amazing city. And I actually got a job at the Disney store off of Union Square. And when that opened in 1995, it was the largest Disney store on the planet. It was the flag. This was before the big one opened in New York, right? And so this had like four different sections. And they had a Walt Disney Gallery. So the first Walt Disney Gallery was in the Main Place Mall in Santa Ana, not too far from Disneyland. And the second one was the Post Street store in San Francisco. So I opened that store as a cast member. So it was cool because I got to meet some of the Imagineers and stuff who were working there. And, you know, I got to work in the gallery, and I was just surrounded by animation art and Imagineering art, and I would sell prints, and it was just super, super cool place to work. I met my wife there. And you know, it's funny because you know, since this is the sweep spot, part of my duties were vacuuming the gallery section every evening, you know, of my shift, because it's like we'd have like 2 hours or something after closing. And I would always have that late shift because I was the college student. Everyone else went home to their family. And I would just clean up the, you know, clean up our section of the store. And it's funny, my wife, she worked in the front of the store, and the Imagineers who, you know, developed like like the rugs and the materials in the front, they didn't think too well. They didn't, like, the vacuums wouldn't pick up the stuff in the this rug. So the cast members working in that section of the store, they would take the Disney folds, which was like this thing we'd fold all the t-shirts and stuff on, and they would like with duct tape, and they'd have to use that to get all the like little bits and stuff off the ground.
Oh yeah.
Wow. And but they would sing, you know, Sweet Nightingale from, you know, Cinderella, because they were all Disney fans. So it was cool. So we all had fun. Yeah, it was a great place to work. And at the time, you know, there was this little tiny studio in Point Richmond, California, that was working on the first computer animated film called Toy Story. So I got to go there, watch it be rendered. You know, we'd have San Francisco State, you know, people from Pixar would come and give us lectures. So it was a really, really, you know, cool place to be. It's like when I was 17 at San Francisco State, I remember having to, you know, host, like we were hosting this animation festival in our brand new building, right? And you know, John Lasseter was there, and Henry Selick were there, both, and they were both CalArts, you know, CalArts alum, and you know, John was he was directing Toy Story at the time, and Henry Selick had just finished Nightmare Before Christmas, which I thought was the most amazing film, and I got to, like, you know, take these guys to their seats and hang out with them, make sure they got to where they, you know, I was their usher basically, right? Or their handler for the event. Right. But, you know, it was really cool. And of course I asked them geeky questions because that's who I am.
Of course.
But yeah, so San Francisco State was such a great experience. And then it, you know, with all that life drawing I was doing at the zoo and all that stuff, I got into CalArts. And as soon as I got to CalArts, I, you know, I'm in Southern California. Right.
Right.
So my wife got a job at an animation studio called Film Roman, where they made The Simpsons. Right. Mm-hmm. And so she moved down here from the Bay Area, and we just got annual passes because it's like, we're so close to Disneyland. On our days off, we can go to the park. So we did. And out back then, it's like, I think an annual pass was, I hate to say it for all your listeners, because it's like, it was like $99. And you know, I transferred to the Disney store in Santa Clarita, California, from the San Francisco store. But, you know, so I still had my discount. So I got my they used to give you a discount on it. So I think I remember buying a pass for my sister for Christmas, and it was like $75 for the year. Right. And it's like, that's not even half a day's admission now, I think. I know. Right?
I remember having one and going to Videopolis in the late 80s.
Do you remember what the price was back then?
I think it was 89.
Okay.
But they had a seasonal one. I think that was the one that was 89. So seasonal, you couldn't go in the summer, but you can go like weekends, and then so not the busy times, but so you were going to CalArts.
Yeah, so I was going to CalArts and going to Disneyland as much as I could. It's like, you know, we had at CalArts around the, you know, everyone had like a like an office, like a really a cubicle, right? That, and you shared it with another, you know, animator, right? So, but we had like, you know, the cubicle walls, which were like regular drywall walls. We would draw all, you know, we draw over them, you know, during the year. It was like, you know, graffiti, I guess, but you know, mostly caricature space. So out by my cubicle, there was always, you know, drawings of Ethan at Disneyland. Cause that's, if I wasn't sitting at my animation desk animating, I was at the park, right? I was standing in that hour long queue for Indy. Right. Oh, yeah. And just soaking it in. And one of my favorite things to do was just, you know, it's like life drawing, you know, you bring a sketchbook, right? You look at people. So one of my favorite things to do is just sit on a bench, the benches up above the, by the train station at Disneyland. I love sitting up there with a sketchbook because you see all the people coming into the park and they're so happy. And then you see the people coming out of the park. Most of them are happy, but sometimes you've got a crying kid or, you know, someone's, you know, not having a good day, but you draw that and, you know, just get inspiration, right?
Yeah.
So that was always, that was fun. And, and at Disney, at CalArts, you know, which, you know, is the school that Walt Disney founded before his passing, you know, has a very close relationship with, you know, the Walt Disney family and the company. And I just remember we had Disney Day almost. And it was like, there was two Disney days. It was Disney Day where all the recruiters would come into the main gallery, and they'd have all their little things set up, right? And they'd hand out postcards and pencils and, you know, come join us at Walt Disney Animation Studios, or come, and Imagineering was there on one of those days and had this beautiful, you know, the Euro Disneyland castle on a postcard. And it was like, you know, come work with us or something like that. And I'm like, wow. Oh, that's cool. So I remember getting that and putting it up on my dorm room wall. It was really, and it's like, that was like the ultimate dream. And, you know, some of my classmates at CalArts, they had grown up in Southern California, and they were part of the Ryman Arts program, which, you know, Herb Ryman had started, and Marty Sklar really like pushed that forward. So a lot of these guys had, you know, they'd done classes at Imagineering, like they'd gone to the life drawing classes at Imagineering, or they'd interned at Imagineering. And I remember, like, as a freshman at CalArts, like hearing all these stories about these guys, these kids right at a, you know, my age, right? And they'd already worked at Imagineering. I'm like, no way, right? Yeah, so I was like, I'm like, oh, dream attainable, right? And you know, a weird thing was happening. It's like I said, Toy Story had come out, right? And you know, I hung out around Pixar, and I had friends who were animators there, and trainee animators too. And I remember sitting down in front of an SGI, like a Silicon Graphics computer, which they animated the original Toy Story on, and they had the Buzz Lightyear rig up on the computer screen, and they're like, Ethan, play around with it. So I did, and I put Buzz in a pose. I'm like, this is fine, but it wasn't drawing, and I really wanted to draw. So, but you know, the audience really wanted to see computer animation. So 2D animation, which was what I wanted to do, was really like dying, right? Because when I got accepted to CalArts, you had Turner Animation Studios doing Cats Don't Dance. You had Warner Feature Animation doing, you know, Quest for Camelot and Iron Giant. You had Fox Animation doing, you know, Anastasia, which which is now owned by Disney. But, you know, it's like, it was CalArts. And at that time, people, like, I remember Fox Animation coming like our first 2 weeks and trying to recruit us, right? So it's like, they gave me a test. Hey, come work on Anastasia. Here's like a model sheet of Anastasia. Do this animation test. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool, but I want to enjoy CalArts, right? Yeah, it's like, I finally got into this place, so let me enjoy it, right? So it was a very interesting time. And you know, my wife, she was a computer animator, right? So at the time in Los Angeles, there was not a lot of computer animation being done.
Okay.
They were still doing 2D animation. And so what happened was, so in the fall, Disney came and they're like, hey, come, you know, come work with us. And then there was the day you put out your portfolio, that Disney day.
Oh.
So I was put on the callback list for feature animation. And I felt really special because they only had 4 people out of the entire animation school on this list. And I was one of them.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, that's cool. And, you know, I'm like, oh, I guess my stuff is pretty good. The only reason I was put on the list is because when I was at San Francisco State, I had done computer animation.
Oh.
CalArts was not teaching any computer animation. And they were basically getting ready to start that their first animated computer animated film at Disney Feature Animation, which was Dinosaur. Right. So so I was put on the list for that. I'm just like, okay. But again, I wanted to draw, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But then something happened, and there was a callback sheet for Imagineering, right? A few of my friends were on there, but I wasn't. And I'm like, oh, bum. Right. And then I noticed these 2 people from Imagineering there, and they had this. You know, this was, you know, before iPads and stuff like that. They had the big push television with the VCR on it, right? Yeah. That we all used to have in our classrooms in the 80s. They had one of those, and they started playing video of audio-animatronic performances. Mm. And I'm like, that's really cool. So it had like Sir from the Alien Encounter at Walt Disney World. It had the Wicked Witch from the Great Movie Ride. All this really cool stuff. I'm like, that looks fun. That looks really amazing. And it was theme park stuff. It's like, you know, it's like you know, the next day I'm like, I was planning on being, you know, at in Disneyland going through Pirates of the Caribbean looking at this stuff, right? Wow. And it's like, oh, people do that. And you know, I'd seen like specials on the Disney Channel in the 80s of like Dave Fighton animating Country Bear Jamboree and all that stuff. And I'm like, oh yeah, I never put it together, I guess, right? And it's like, oh, you could do that. So one of my friends from San Francisco State actually started at Imagineering around the same time in that department. And so I went and talked to these people afterwards and like, oh, we're just looking for interns right now. And we're filled up. We're already filled up. We have too many candidates. I'm like, oh, okay. And they said, maybe next year. So then next year I just kept pestering them and I got an internship and it was cool. Cause it was only supposed to be 12 weeks. And I always joke that, you know, I started, you know, I was there, what, 2000 weeks or something like that, but yeah, it was only supposed to be 12 weeks. Cause you know, it's like, I didn't think I was going to start at Imagineering. I thought I was going to start at Feature and end up at Imagineering, but somehow, right. I leapfrogged over 30 years of my, you know, 12-year-old plan. Right. And it worked out.
Yeah. Wow. So you're in Imagineering now. And was your I don't want to say major, but your concentration in like jobs you're getting or projects you're a part of, were they with the audio animatronics stuff?
Or? Yes. So I was brought in as an intern in the show programming and animation department. So that's the department that would program the performance and still does program the performance of the audio animatronic characters in all the Disney parks around the globe. The show programmers are, so the animators do the animation of the characters, and then the show programmers, they will program vehicles like the Star Tours vehicle, the Indiana Jones ride vehicle, things like that. The drop sequence on Tower of Terror or the Guardians attraction, right? Okay. That's done by a show programmer. And sometimes an animator will step in and work on that stuff. I did some preliminary programming on Star Tours: The Adventure Continues. I got to do the whole Hoth planet, which that was fun.
Yeah,
I know it was completely touched up. I did like the rough cut basically, but just so we could get a feeling of it. But it was, you know, it was a really cool department to be in because you know, it's like that department touched every attraction, right? And they needed people because they were starting, you know, they were developing California Adventure. Disneyland Paris was in early development and Tokyo Disney Sea. So I was brought in. It was an internship, but it wasn't through the official Imaginations competition or anything. It was through the department and they needed to staff up for Tokyo Disney Sea.
Of course.
And I was basically just brought in to learn how to animate the figures. So I never got coffee. I never did copies. I never did those traditional intern things.
Yeah.
I was basically given an animation console, an audiometronic figure. My favorite was the Hippie Crane from America Sings. And you'd be given a track. And, you know, I think they had just done the Disneyland Forever kiosks, right? So I think I found Joy to the World. Right. The hippie crane sang and it's like, oh, I'm going to animate this. In fact, so I started there, like, you know, it was like my last year at CalArts, right? Cause I'd done 2 years at San Francisco State and then did another, you know, 2.5, I guess, at CalArts, you know, so I had all my units to graduate. But you know, the last year I was at Imagineering. And, you know, this was before cell phones and stuff like that. One of my favorite memories of that time period was, you know, so I started by going in 2 days a week to Imagineering to learn how to animate these audiometronic characters. And I was having so much fun. Like, I was just loving it. And it's like, you know, you can come in 3 days a week if you want. I'm like, okay, it worked with my class schedule, right? I had night classes because, you know, my teachers were working at Disney Feature Animation during the day. Yeah. And then, you know, teaching up CalArts at night. So it's like, well, I'll do the same thing, right? So it worked out well for me. And what happened was I had a night class at CalArts And I go up to the library, which is right across from A113, you know, the Disney character animation thing, like the, you know, wing of CalArts. And I see this giant line of people. And at the front of the line is Mark and Alice Davis sitting down, signing, you know, books and stuff. And I had missed, they had done a lecture. They had done all this stuff and I missed it. I was so disappointed because Mark Davis was my ultimate idol, right? Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, poor me. I don't have anything for them to sign. So I go into my, you know, class in the library or whatever, mope the whole time.
Yeah.
And then the next day I had to go back to Imagineering. So one of the ladies who was training me, Deborah Short, who animated the dragon for Disneyland Paris, the one that's under the castle.
Like, yeah.
Great. There's great footage of her animating it and looked so cool. And she was an alumni of San Francisco State Animation as well. So we got along great. Nice. But she, you know, was, she just asked me, Ethan, what's wrong? Because I must have been super mopey still. And I said, oh, I miss Mark and Alice Davis. And she said, well, you know, Ethan, you know, next week we're having Mark and Alice over for lunch for the department. It's not a day you typically come in, but would you like to come in that day? I'm like, yes, please. So yeah. That was just amazing because at Tahunga in North Hollywood, where all the production was done, which is where, you know, I worked, right? That's where the show programming team was. That's where all the audiometronics were built at the time. There was half a Circle Vision theater. Mm-hmm. So think of Circle Vision at Disneyland. They had half of it there.
Nice.
Yeah. And so you could go in there and, you know, you could rent out the space. So we sat in the Circle Vision room. I think there was, I don't know, 8 people from my department. And and then Mark and Alice. And then Mark had a slide projector that he was projecting all his artwork onto a Circle Vision screen, right?
Yeah.
And he was going through all this great stuff like Garden of the Gods and Western River Expedition, all those attractions that didn't happen, you know, but ended up in, you know, Chris Merritt's great Mark Davis book.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was so cool. And it was like just, you know, having this not one-on-one conversation, but like a family dinner with Mark and Alice Davis, right?
Wow.
and you know, and he asked, you know, what I was doing, like, oh, I'm going to CalArts. He's like, good. And gives, you know, Mark and Alice gave a lot of money to CalArts over the years. Mm-hmm. One of the theaters is like named, for, you know, in like in their honor or something. So it was very cool. And, you know, I asked Mark Davis, like, hey, I'm animating the Hippie Crane right now from America Sings. Would you mind taking a look at it? He's like, I'd be happy to. So Mark and Alice came by and looked at it. And, you know, he gave me some notes on it. And he was like, oh, good job. Give me a pat on the back. And I'm like, I'm good. Wow. Right? I mean, honestly, at that point, I could have just said, okay, my 12-week internship is almost done. Yeah. I can walk away from this and I can go, you know, scoop ice cream at Baskin Robbins and just be happy.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
So
wow.
Yeah. So it was very cool.
That is really neat, especially because of your past and how you looked up to him and you finally got to, I mean, he looked at your work and gave you some approval and
that's right. Really, yeah. And it was funny because it's like, you know, being such a fan of the parks, it's like, you know, it's like I knew who Tony Baxter was, I knew who you know, Rick Rothschild was, you know, I knew who some of these, you know, Imagineering celebrities were, right? So when I was in meetings and stuff with them, I was like, you know, at first I was like very shy, right? Yeah. And then, you know, they're people just like me, right? Yeah. And, you know, and then you work with them on multiple projects and then they become friends, right? So that was one of the great things about working there.
Oh, wow. So what were some of your early projects you were assigned to?
Well, the first thing I was, so I did training for, you know, that first, gosh, 6 months, right? So I basically just sat in the animation lab and just honed my skills on how to animate an audiometronic on the animation console, because it's not something you pick up off the street, right? It's not taught in any school.
Yeah.
It is, you know, very specialized, right? So I was learning how to do that and being taught by the people who were taught by the first Imagineers, like Wathel Rogers, who developed those tools. Oh, yeah. And it was good. It was amazing. I felt so fortunate. And meanwhile, the whole 2D animation industry is just like crumbling. And I'm just like, blinders, right? But I'm still going to keep drawing. I'm still going to keep going to live drawing class, but I'm going to learn this new thing that not anyone else is doing, really, right? Mm-hmm. So I just kept at it. So I worked on my first attraction that I started working on was, so I had graduated CalArts, did like another month of just training, and then they needed me on Sinbad for Tokyo DisneySea. And that was interesting because it was all staged in a warehouse building in Castaic, California, right? Okay. Yeah. Not too far from CalArts.
Yeah.
And like, I swear you could like go out in the parking lot and you could see Magic Mountain. And it's like, we had like all the sets and all the figures from Tokyo DisneySea just sitting there. And I'm like, man, if the people at Magic Mountain knew what was over here, their minds would be blown, right?
Oh, yeah,
it's like, you've got like some of the best, you know, theme park attractions being put together right here, right?
Wow.
And you're still going on Gold Rusher, right? So, so it was cool. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, the audiomatronics in that show were fun because they were, you know, stylized, not a Small World character, not a full Pirates of the Caribbean character, somewhere in between, like a 3.5, you know, foot tall, you know, cartoony character, which made it fun to animate. We weren't trying to replicate realistic motion. And, you know, I always, you know, gravitated, like when I was in school and when I animate things, I always liked the slapsticky characters. I liked the Roger Rabbits. I liked LeFou from, you know, Beauty and the Beast. Like, that's the type of character that I would have wanted to animate. Yeah. I didn't want to animate a princess, right? I wanted to animate Flounder, right?
Right, of course.
And so the animation was a little bit more cartoony and a little snappier, right? Uh-huh. So we really pushed that. And there was a lot of young animators who were hired around the same time I was. Mm-hmm. And we were all just like looking at each other's work and just trying to make it look as good as it possibly could. Right. Yeah. And that was fun, but you know, it was interesting. My very first day in the Castaic building where we were working on Sinbad, I worked an entire 8-hour shift. And then like, I was told, Ethan, you're going to go home, have dinner, rest up, and then go to Tahunga and we're all going to carpool down to Disneyland for third shift work. I'm like, what? So, and it's like, I had never been backstage at Disneyland. I'd been to Disneyland as a guest tons of time at this point because I'd been an annual pass holder for two years, right?
Yeah.
So we went down there. We drove backstage through the ball gate exit, and then we parked right behind Pirates of the Caribbean. And next thing I know, I'm walking through Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm hanging out in the set pieces, and I'm walking on the Wicked Wench, right? I'm like, my mind is just blown, right? It's like,
yeah.
And you know, I don't think you can go up there anymore. But at the time, if you are in, there's the well scene. There's this big tower, right? That's part of the, you know, the set. But there's a ladder that goes all the way up to the top there, so you can like adjust the light bulb that's there. I decide, oh, I'm going to go up that ladder.
Oh, no.
There was no rules back then for like, you know, hooking onto something like there would be today. So I just walk up there and I'm like looking at the entire thing and I'm looking at the layout of the attraction. It's amazing, right?
Yeah.
It's like from that vantage point, you can see how tight it really is. So, I mean, being able to go backstage and just take that in was amazing. And, you know, I went down there a couple times during that rehab, but my focus at the time was on, you know, Sinbad and Tokyo DisneySea. But, you know, years later, you know, after Tokyo DisneySea, I got the short straw and I worked on this little attraction at Disney California Adventure before it opened called Superstar Limo. And but and that was, you know what, it was fun, right? because it was a fun team. And I think we all kind of knew it wasn't great. Right. Right? Yeah, so we had a lot of fun working on it, and we didn't take it to, you know, I didn't design it. Right. But, you know, it's like you could see things that could be improved like big time.
Right.
Right. But again, so I worked on the install for Limo, and then I worked on the install for Muppet Vision 3D. I animated the whole little penguin orchestra in the field, and that was fun. And then after I finished that, I finally got hired on, because, you know, at Imagineering, it's like I was brought in as an intern. I was like a temporary hire. And then after 2 years, I guess, they made me a blue badge, so I became, you know, a real boy like Pinocchio, and nice. So that was fun, and and then I did a project in Florida. We were adding like little pop-up raptors to the Countdown to Extinction attraction, because they were having issues with some of the maintenance on some of the dinosaurs there, so we had to come up with a bee show. So we worked on that, and then I guess late 2000, I went to Tokyo Disneyland and Tokyo Disney Sea to work on the final installation of Sinbad and all that stuff. So,
wow.
Yeah. So that was really fun. And, you know, again, I'm such a Disney fan. I'm in Japan. First time I'd ever really been away from, you know, I'd been to Mexico, sure, right? I'd been to Canada, but I'd never really been out of the country, and never for, you know, 6 weeks, right? And, you know, my wife and I were actually, you know, our wedding date had already been planned before that trip. So it was like I was there for 6 weeks, and then 2 weeks later after I returned, we got married.
Wow.
Excuse me.
Well, very neat. So California Adventure, you said you were part of the Superstar Limo. What was something else you did over there with the opening of, was it near the opening or?
Yeah, I mean, it was, it was all around the same, you know, because Tokyo Disney Sea opened in 2001. In September, California Adventure opened in February. Right. So we were bouncing back between the different attractions when things were ready. So Tokyo Disney Sea, I worked on the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea attraction, all the figures in that. I did not work on Indiana Jones for Tokyo Disney Sea, but, you know, definitely Sinbad. There's an animatronic of this little cobra called Bakit that's in the pre-show for the Magic Lamp Theater at an Arabian Coast. So I worked on that. But I mean, Sinbad had hundreds of figures. That was like a ton of work. But when I was in Japan, I had to buy myself an annual pass, because I'll never forget, like, my first day, you know, backstage at Tokyo Disneyland. I go around the Tokyo Disney Sea, you know, it's the construction side. I go around the attraction. I'm learning where everything is. I'm like, I need to go see the Mickey Mouse Review, right? Because Mickey Mouse Review, I never saw that. I didn't go to Walt Disney World until 1986, so it was already gone. And so I go over to where Mickey Mouse Review is in Fantasyland from backstage, and I walk up to it, and the cast member at the front asks for my ticket in Japanese. I had no idea what they're saying, right? Because I did not have my interpreter with me. And they like did the arms like crossed in front of them, like, do not come in here. Right. And I was just like, oh, okay. So then I learned, so, oh, you can't just go on stage like you can at Disneyland. Right. And, you know, go onto an attraction. Yeah. They still had the A through E tickets.
Oh yeah.
In 2000. So, but you could buy a day pass. Right. And you could get an annual pass, which just had to wear a little lanyard and, you know, show it at all the attractions. So me and a friend, my friend Elena, who programmed Soaring Over California, we were both there on a business trip. So, you know, we both were like, listen, we're in the evening. We're not going to like go to downtown Tokyo and go party.
Right.
we want to relax and we want to enjoy the park here in Japan, because when are we going to come back, right? So we bought annual passes to Tokyo Disneyland, and we would just go into the park, and it was fun because, you know, you had Mickey Mouse Review, total 1970s vibe to it still, the pre-show was the same from and then they had Meet the World, right, had that awesome Sherman Brothers song. It was a carousel theater attraction, but it was planned for Epcot, right, as well, and they actually built the figures because we found them, but they never did the show. But it was a cool time to be at Tokyo Disneyland, right? We're working on Tokyo DisneySea. The park had this really cool 1980s feel to it still, which I loved because that was the Disneyland I grew up with. Yeah. So it was like a total nostalgia trip for me.
That's one thing I hear about that park, is that if you want to go back to the 80s in some areas of it, right?
Yeah. I don't know how much it's like I worked on the Fantasyland expansion. That was the last thing I worked on while I was at Imagineering that's opened. And I was the art director on the Minnie's Style Studio, which is a meet and greet similar to Meet Mickey, like at Mickey's house, right? We couldn't fit Meet Minnie into Minnie's house because there just wasn't the space, right? There was no sound stage there, like there is behind Mickey's house. So it was Robert Coltrane, who's now a Disney legend, he came up with this whole concept of mini style studio. And, you know, I got to, you know, art direct the whole thing and, you know, go to the field with it. And it was really fun. And I worked on the Beauty and the Beast attraction, like designing the little vignettes and stuff. But that took up, like, you know, they don't have the rocket jets anymore. And those rocket jets were like classic 80s looking rocket jets. That's gone. They had original Autopia cars, right? Not the new Honda ones. They looked like the 1980s Autopia vehicles. So all that's gone now, but it's been replaced with really cool things, right? Yeah. You've got the Beauty and the Beast ride, Mini Style Studio. I would imagine, because I haven't been there since it was, you know, when I was last there, it was under construction. I don't think it would feel as... It wouldn't have as cool a 1980s feel to it anymore, because I think they've really tried to remove that. And I mean, I would imagine it feels probably like the most modern Disney theme park, like Magic Kingdom Park, right?
I would imagine that's not their goal, is to have it
'80s. But, you know, in 2000, you know, it opened in '83, right? I guess when it opened, Big Thunder wasn't there, right? Mm-hmm. Big Thunder was added in the 90s. You know, so it's like they slowly, you know, added things to that park, but the bones of it felt like the 1980s, which I appreciate.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like we could keep going and going. I know that I have a list here of some of the projects you worked on. I did want to touch on two things before we leave, and we'll definitely continue this at another time. But so you worked on Superstar Limo, and I know they changed that to Monsters, Inc.
Yes.
Yeah. And were you a part of that changeover?
I was. So that was actually, that was the first time I was asked to step from behind the animation console. So in 2004, Robert Coltrane, who I mentioned before, he and producer Jody McLaughlin asked me if I would take on this role where I would basically help Larry Nicolai design all the vignettes of the Monsters characters. And then I'd be there and I would shadow Larry as they were being sculpted, and I'd learn like the ins and outs of art directing for figure sculpture and all that stuff. So I learned, so I was given that opportunity, and then Larry was going to go off of that project and start developing Monsters for Tokyo. And then it was my responsibility to art direct those figures through production and then animate them. So we had a cast of like 42 characters in that attraction. And that was actually the first time that Walt Disney Imagineering had worked with Garner Holt Productions. So, you know, Garner had done like that, you know, all the figures for Haunted Mansion Holiday, and mm-hmm. I worked on Winnie the Pooh, right? Not much, because there wasn't much to do in there. I was hoping for more of the Tokyo version. But, you know, we got like the Florida figures, which was fine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what was interesting about that, I remember we were finishing up programming in the Winnie the Pooh attraction, and Haunted Mansion Holiday had just opened.
Yeah.
And me and one of my show programmer team members, we went into Haunted Mansion to see what had been done, because we didn't work on that. My department mm-hmm. didn't touch that. And we went through there, and I'm like, wow, these figures are pretty good. And they had all these functions and all this stuff. And, you know, I think what I learned at that point was, okay, if we build the figure in-house, I get a solid Winnie the Pooh that doesn't blink, that just rocks back and forth.
Right.
If we build something at Garner Holt, I get an 11 function figure or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So it was like, that was interesting to me. And as an animator, it's like, well, I want to play with more, right? I want more functionality. I want that action figure that has more points of articulation. Right.
Yeah.
So we were able to do that on Monsters. So like the figures in Monsters Incorporated, you know, we had the budget of like a Peter Pan or a Pinocchio. Like it was a C-ticket dark ride budget,
mm-hmm.
but we got a lot of functions into those characters. No, they don't all have moving mouths. And that was nope, we're not going to do that because it's a C-ticket dark ride, but we can get eye turns. We can get eye blinks. We can, you know, have heads that turn and then the body goes and follows it. It's like, it's a little bit more than your typical dark ride, right?
Did they repurpose some of the,
you
know, from Superstar? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And that was that was actually one of my responsibilities was how to figure out, well, you know, I got to design all the CDA agents. So every CDA agent in that attraction is a former celebrity from Superstar Limo. So the figure there's the one holding the vacuum, and all the dates that are on on every single CDA agent, there's numbers. Right. Those are dates that are important to key team members, right? So there's the one that's holding the vacuum cleaner, like kind of knocking it like this, right?
Uh-huh.
That's my wife and I's wedding anniversary.
Oh, right? Nice.
Yeah. And it's the old Tim Allen figure. So he used to have a microphone that went back and forth. I'm like, well, that's a cool move. You just use that actuator and make it a vacuum. And then he's kind of doing like what the guy with the sword does in Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah. Right. So, you know, we did that. And the one that's coming up out of the manhole, that's Cher. the Drew Carey one is the most obvious, right?
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, he was holding the star maps and now he's holding the missing poster of Boo, right?
Yeah.
But that was one of my favorite attractions I worked on because we did it quick. We did it in 18 months from concept to completion. We just turned that around and, you know, I think everyone had a lot of fun on it. And I think if we, you know, I'm not with Imagineering anymore, but it's like, I would, those of you from Imagineering who are listening, try doing that again. It's super fun and it's more spontaneous, right? Damn. And it's like, you know, most of the attractions, like they get stuck in this 5-year grind and you're just like doing the same thing over and over again for 5 years and, you know, and it gets stale, right? And then by the time it opens, it's a little stale. It's like, I think it would, you know, be better for the organization if they could just be a little quicker, right?
Yeah, I ask about that attraction because as my co-host and some of the listeners will definitely know, that's one of my favorite attractions. And a lot of people go, why? And I go, I don't know. It's just, I like the movie, of course, movies now. I don't know. There's something about it, nostalgia in a way of old DCA, but it's not because it came later, right? That it was reopened in 2004.
We started working on it in 2004 and we were soft opening it December of 2005. And then I think the official opening was like, you know, February, you know, whatever the opening date of, you know, DCA was. February 8th of 2006 I think was the official opening date, but you know, the cast members were already soft opening it and training right. and all that stuff. But, you know, Roz, that was the first interactive animatronic figure. And that like took a ton of time because, you know, I had to animate every single line that was written. And, you know, Kevin Rafferty, who, you know, he started at Disneyland and all that stuff. You know, he and Robert Coltrane, they were partners and, you know, they developed Monsters and, you know, they were a great team. And I loved working on Robert and Kevin shows. And, you know, I'll never forget, I'd been up animating Roz, doing all these lines. And, you know, we were, I think we had Pete Docter and Bob Iger coming through, right? The director of the movie and the president of the Walt Disney Company coming through that day. And of course, Robert and Kevin are going to show up, you know, to show off their baby. And, you know, Kevin came up to me and I had like done an all-nighter or something on this Roz figure to get it ready. And he's like, Ethan, we've got this great idea. It's called Toy Story Mania. And we're going to have a Mr. Potato Head audiometronic, and he's going to pull his nose off and he's going to put it in his ear. And he's I'm like, and oh my God, I must have looked so panicked, right? Because I'm like, I don't know how we're going to do that. I think I told Kevin, like, that's a great idea. It sounds like an R&D project, right? So, and we did get funding to, like, do research and development, and he just pulls his ear off. But, you know, that was a hydraulic figure, and I know at the time we kept saying, you know, if we did this with electrics, right, electric actuation, it would probably be more repeatable and successful in the long run, but the technology was not there yet. It is now. Most of the animatronic figures are electric today. But you know, it was fun. Like, I really enjoyed working on that Monsters attraction. Yeah, I think the other thing is the music, right? It has really good music.
It does.
And I know a lot of it's like needle drop, like from the you know, from the film. But, you know, that score by Michael Giacchino has, like, you know, really nice moments, right? You've got the beginning of it. You go in and you've got that frantic, like, big city music, right? And then at the end, you've got that very sweet, like, almost lullaby with Boo. And it's calm and peaceful. So I think, you know, Robert designed a space that had small, medium, and large scenes, right? So you felt like you went on a journey. And then the music just adds to it, right?
I love the ginger smell too.
Oh yeah, that ginger smell is fantastic
when it works.
I it's so funny because I think that attraction has gotten more popular over time.
It has. It's really odd because I was there last month and I thought, I'm gonna go on that, and it was like 45 minute wait. I thought, I don't know.
I'm the same way, because like, you know, when my kids were, you know, my eldest son, he was born right after the attraction opened, right? So I mean, that attraction, I think it was one of the first attractions he went on as an infant. So it's very, it's a very special attraction to me. And it's what I was working on when my wife was pregnant. So, you know, it is, it's fun, but I just remember being able to just walk on it. Maybe a 10, 15 minute wait. And now, like you said, it's 45 minutes to an hour, which that's good. I hope it stays.
I don't know. We'll see. I hope so.
It's a good one.
Well, I definitely want to continue this because there's some other things I want to talk about. So we'll do this another time. But thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was great.
Is there anything you'd like to plug, or, you know, people follow you anywhere or anything like that?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at ethan.f.reed. I have drawings up there occasionally when I'm not too busy. And you know, it's not Christmas, but go buy my golden book, Santa Stops at Disneyland.
For sure.
So, I think it's because it's after the holidays, I think you can get it on a deal right now on Amazon.
I'm going to go there right now.
All right.
Well, thanks a lot, Ethan.
All right. Thank you so much, Lynn.
All right. That was episode 379.
I was just mesmerized. I was stunned into silence.
Yeah, you were very quiet.
Well, I figured you had it covered. You know, I don't like to interrupt when things are going well. And, you know.
Well, we did have a little bit of a scheduling conflict, but it worked out, and hope you really enjoyed that. We really enjoyed talking with Ethan, and we will be having him back because we didn't get to quite finish his career with Imagineering and all the projects that he did. It was one of my favorites. So I really enjoyed talking with him, and we're definitely going to have him back in the near future. So look forward to that.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll have to join us next time.
Like I said, I was just stunned in the silence.
But if you would like to help us out, you can leave a review, and we always read them about this point in the podcast. And you can go to Apple Podcasts or iTunes and leave a review, and we'll read it. We haven't had one since January, so
come on, people!
Come on!
That's right. We want some reviews.
Let's get two more. So, so we'll do that, and we'll read them next time. And also go to our website, check out, our show notes that we have there from our current events and from this episode, and links and everything. You can get links. There's links on there to our t-shirts. You can get our second book is on there for sale, signed. And that's where we'll post if we're ever doing any kind of signings or events or anywhere where we might go.
Appearances on national talk shows, you know.
Right. So you can find all that on thesweetspot.com when that happens. So, all right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.